Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Shakespearean comedy meets Italian opera on the 19th century American frontier in a new production of The Taming of the Shrew. I know that sounds crazy, but there's a surprisingly convincing story behind this new version from Theater for a New Audience. Director Aaron Arbus will tell us why Shakespeare has moved in time and space, and composer-arranger Michael Friedman will explain where all those R-rated songs came from. But first, much of the cast has joined us here in the Soundcheck studio, and we will hear a live performance of When You Kiss an Italian Girl. John Panko is the singer, and we'll hear a live performance on Soundcheck.
I know rave about Italy, I know talk about my country, any place is the same to me, just so long I got enough to eat. But I like to tell you this, I'm a kisser of plenty, miss, and of all of the sweet kiss, there's one I got the world to beat. When you kiss an Italian girl, boss, oh, you feel well, don't know how to tell her, but you get so excited. You go home that night, you put your left shoe upon the foot, what is right. Let an Italian girl, boss, kiss you upon the cheek, and you won't wash your face for a long time, cause you feel so swell when you kiss an Italian girl. My sweetheart, she look like a freak, got a face just like next week. Every time that I kiss her cheek, right away she look like a hell. Married men, if you got the strife, you can lead a happy life. Every time that you kiss your wife, think of an Italian girl. When you kiss an Italian girl, boss, how you feel, well, I don't know how to tell it, but before much long, you feel it so strong, you go and choke the monkey till he sing it a song. Let an Italian girl, boss, kiss you upon the cheek, and you want to wash your face for a long time, cause it feels so sweet when you kiss an Italian girl.
When You Kiss an Italian Girl. Somehow that is part of Theater for a New Audience's new version of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. You heard Jonathan Mastro at our piano and John Panko singing. Let me also introduce you to the director of the new version of The Taming of the Shrew. That's Aaron Arbus. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you.
And also joining me is Michael Friedman, the composer and arranger. Michael, is that your song, or did you find that somewhere?
No, that's unbelievably early Irving Berlin. That's
even way.
Before Alexander's Ragtime Band, before anything.
Really?
Yeah. So it's one of his earliest songs. He first got on the scene as somebody who...
Shortly after Shakespeare died.
Shortly after Shakespeare died. So, yeah, it's one of the joys of working on this production has been uncovering this trove of sort of pre-World War I, late 19th century, very early turn of the century, American music that relates to these themes of the West and of Italy and that connects Shakespeare to all of that.
Aaron, this is going to be, of course, the big question here is we're talking about Shakespeare, the American West, and Italy. How does this the Taming of the Shrew is set in Italy. I understand that. How does it move west?
Well, Shakespeare's play actually has two settings in it, as originally written. We associate Taming of the Shrew with Kate Petruchio, and that, of course, is set in Italy. But it's in fact a play within a play,
right.
And he has he creates a framing device called the Induction, which in his version is set in contemporary England. And so, as we were thinking about this play, and I was thinking about the values of the world, of Shakespeare's world in this play, and he's created a world where it's a world of rough commerce. It's a world where marriage is a transaction. It's a world where women have very limited options. It's a dog-eat-dog world where they're filled with con men and fools and brutes who are sort of lying to each other and scheming and trying to win the prize, whatever that may be. And it's a world where there are strangers coming to town seeking their fortune. And it's a world where there are traveling troupes of players performing Shakespeare plays. And so all of those things made me think about America in the 19th century and the American frontier, where, in fact, Shakespeare was, you know, the most popular playwright. So
even in the gold rush, frontier towns, little tiny hotels and theaters and stuff.
Well, and they have these, you'll look at pictures of these old West towns and they'll have these immaculate little opera houses where plays got performed. And when I was first talking to Erin about this idea and she mentioned setting in the American West, what excited me about the connection between Shakespeare and the West and this play was, of course, the other thing that swept America at that time was Italian opera.
Even in the West?
Especially in the West. They would have these towns in which on Tuesday the Shakespeare players performed, and then on Wednesday some, you know, ramshackle company would come through and do a Bellini opera. So actually Shakespeare and Italian bel canto opera were the two huge hits of the American West during this time.
So these American songs that you've collected and arranged, there are little bits of Italian opera, as we heard at the top of the segment, which are part of it. They are anachronistic, but they to Shakespeare, but they suit the mood and the kind of the vision of the piece, it sounds like.
Well, the Induction, which is rarely performed, we are doing in this production, and we are
this is again the framing device,
and we're setting that in the 19th century, so that there is this traveling late 19th century. So there's this traveling troupe of players who are using the theatrical vocabulary and the music of their time to put on to tell the Kate Petruchio story, which of course is set in Italy.
Mm-hmm. Kate is the shrew,
yes.
of the Taming of the Shrew. Her younger sister is the one that all these guys are like competing. They're actually bidding,
absolutely,
to marry her.
Yeah,
and Petruchio is the one who tames Kate, so to speak. Now, I want to sort of get back to the sort of the theme of, you know, a woman's role in a little bit. But Michael, you did the music for Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson.
I did, and the lyrics.
Did that lead you into like studying 19th century American song? And did that kind of lead you to some of what we're hearing today?
Well, it's funny. I have another piece that I worked on with the Civilians, which is a company I work with a lot, called Paris Commune, that we're going to be doing at BAM in the Next Wave Festival this fall. And Paris Commune, all the songs, it's set in 1871, and all the songs in that were songs that we actually found, like, in the Bibliothèque Nationale in Paris, these songs that were written during the Commune, all these popular cabaret songs that have sort of fallen off the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And so that actually was the first time I kind of piqued my interest in this, all these forgotten, all this forgotten popular music and how actually fantastic it is. And then in Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson, we used this song, The Hunters of Kentucky, which was, in fact, Jackson's campaign song. He's the first person to run for president with an actual campaign song.
Mm-hmm.
And we use that as our curtain call, kind of a punk cover of The Hunters of Kentucky. So I have a continuing interest in sort of forgotten popular music and bringing it back and trying to make it as dangerous and relevant as I think that's what's exciting about popular music.
Right.
So
where does Waiting at the Church come from?
Waiting at the Church is by the, no one knows who these people are, the great songwriting team of Pether and Lee.
So I'm going to take your word that it's great.
It's a late 19th century song, and it's it's pretty self-explanatory, but it's the sad story of one woman's travails.
All right, and this is in the show?
Yeah, this is at the beginning of the second act. It sort of is a little prologue to the second act of the show.
All right. We'll hear a live performance on Soundcheck. This is from the Theater for a New Audience edition of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, running at the Duke Theater on 42nd Street through April 21st. And Olwen Fuere is singing here, once again, Jonathan Mastro at our piano.
Ah! I'm in a nice bit of trouble, I confess. Somebody with me has had a game. I should by now be a proud and happy bride, but I've still got to keep my single name. I was proposed to by Obadiah Binks in a very gentlemanly way. Gave him all my money so that he could buy a home, and punctually at 12 o'clock today, there was I, waiting at the church, waiting at the church, waiting at the church, when I found he'd left me in the lurch. Oh, how it did upset me. All at once, he sent me round a note. Here's the very note. This is what he wrote. Can't get away to marry you today. My wife won't let me.
Waiting at the church. Actually, I recognize that. So when you hear that last line, you don't forget that. No, I can't get away to marry you today. My wife won't let me.
It's one of the great punchlines.
So how does that fit? Who's singing this in the play?
We have...
I should just say, again, Alwyn Fuere singing it here in the studio.
At the beginning of the frame, of the induction, at the beginning of the play, Sly, who's the character who sort of witnesses then the play. Mm-hmm. Sly is a drunk kicked out of a bar by a barmaid who Alwyn plays in the play. And so at the beginning of our second act, the barmaid comes out as kind of a little performance. And I think, you know, partly influenced in our idea of the West and of where this would be, of the sort of Marlene Dietrich in Destry Rides Again type thing. And then this song played so well into that kind of persona. And also I think the songs, the double up ending of the situation in the song, which is the woman abandoned at the altar, which happens in Taming of the Shrew. And then, of course, at the end, it turns out the man can't marry her because his wife is actually in charge of things. So the gender politics reverse themselves at the
end. So this gets us, Aaron, to the question of gender politics, which has been very problematic for a lot of people with the Taming of the Shrew. The idea that this fiercely independent woman, apparently by the end of the play, you know, has this speech about how it's great to be obedient to your husband, it's the job of a wife and stuff. So how did you approach that?
Well, I must confess I love the sort of the controversy of it, and it is a play that polarizes audiences as sort of in the same way that Merchant of Venice does. George Bernard Shaw thought it was an impossible play, a loathsome play. And Harold Bloom thinks that Kate and Petruchio are going to be the happiest married couple in all of Shakespeare. For me, it's actually a great love story. And it's one of Shakespeare's only investigations into a couple within a marriage. I mean, we get the Macbeths. And we know how that ends, but you know, most of his comedies end in marriage. You get to the very end of the play, and there's going to be a marriage. In Taming of the Shrew, they get married early on, and then they have to live with each other, which to me is ugly, difficult, existential territory. And that's part of my. That's part of my interest in it. I mean, he is writing a play about a misogynistic society, undoubtedly. And
but is he being ironic or sarcastic about it, I guess, is the question.
I'm not going to answer that quite yet. But he's truthfully depicting probably the society that he lived in, which bears an interesting resemblance to our society, which has certainly, you know, there's misogyny is not gone.
And in 19th century America, where you've said it, you know, there's that adds a whole nother layer of that we could parse. But there are two other cast members we haven't heard from yet, and I want to make sure we get to hear them. So Again, we're speaking with Aaron Arbus, the director of The Taming of the Shrew, Michael Friedman, the composer and arranger, and Michael, Don't Leave Your Wife. This will be sung by John Christopher Jones and Peter Maloney. And is this an old song, too?
Yes, it is. It's an old vaudeville turn, and it's I'd say the lyrics pretty much explain themselves.
Okay. But I was hoping that might be the case.
It definitely plays into our theme of the comedy of marriage.
Yes.
This is from the new production by Theatre for a New Audience of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew.
There are many married men who lead a double life.
One they lead in cabarets, the other with their wife.
Staying out till 4 while wifey goes to bed at 10.
Looks well on the surface, but just listen, married men. Don't leave your wife alone, waiting for you at home. When you go out nights, I'll tell you what. Maybe she's waiting home,
and maybe she's not.
When you're with Flo
or May,
haunting a new cafe, she may go out with a fella
and not drink sarsaparilla.
So don't leave your wife alone.
What is good for Mr. Gander's good for Mrs. Goose. Wives can go as fast as husbands once you let them loose. Wives can paint the town and make their husbands look like skates. They got paint enough to paint the whole United States. Don't leave your wife alone, waiting for you at home. When you go out nights, I'll tell you what. Maybe she's waiting home and maybe she's not. When you go out and chase after a pretty face, she may go and do some chasing with some wise brother Mason. So don't leave your wife alone.
That is John Christopher Jones and Peter Maloney singing live in our studio. Once again, Jonathan Mastro at the piano. And Don't Leave Your Wife, an old vaudeville song that appears in the new production of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, done by Theatre for a New Audience and running through April 21st at the Duke on 42nd Street, directed by Aaron Arbus, who's been with me, and Michael Friedman, the composer, has been with me as well, composer and arranger. And somehow you guys found a piece of music that brings together opera and the Wild West. the overture from Rossini's William Tell, which, of course, familiar to many Americans, is the theme from The Lone Ranger. What is this, like your curtain call music or
yeah,
something?
Yeah, we used
like
it actually as part of the overture and then as the curtain call, and it just seemed like, it was like, oh my gosh, a piece of Italian, a famous piece of Italian opera that then, of course, has been retranslated as a piece of music, most famous piece of music about the American West. What could be more potent?
So that's part of the fun as well, and to find out how all of these songs, opera arias, early American popular songs, fit into the Shakespearean play, you'll just have to check out The Taming of the Shrew through April 21st at the Duke on 42nd. Michael, Aaron, and the cast, thank you so much for being with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And speaking of opera, dare to take Soundcheck's Haiku Challenge. Sum up Wagner's four-opera ring cycle in 17 syllables. Find out how on the Soundcheck page, wnyc.org/soundcheck. That's going to do it for the show today. Tomorrow, an animal psychologist explains how animals interact with human sound environments, including those that might be harmful, and we hear music specifically made for cats. Plus, a live performance from the San Antonio-based indie rock band, Girl in a Coma. Our technical director is Irene Trudell, the program produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. I'm John Schaefer. Tune in tomorrow for another Soundcheck.
We'll be right back.